Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey Podditors, oh my god, it's almost Christmas. If you celebrate Christmas, merry almost Christmasness, and I don't know what Christmasness is, and if you don't, then I hope that you're all well and good too, and happy and safe. Do I want to say in these weird times? I don't really, but it's kind of come out now. Anyway, in this week's episode, I speak to Em Clarkson. She's a content creator, writer, and champion of exercising to make you feel good. We discuss her three things that she wishes she was taught in school, namely the benefits of exercise, female sexual pleasure, and how to do a tax return. Just FYI, we don't actually cover how to do a tax return. We both just got stressed out about the topic. I love speaking to Em. It's a very good giggly episode, and I hope that you enjoy it too. Bye! Hello, and welcome to Adulting. Today, I'm joined by Em Clarkson.
Hi!
How are you doing?
I'm okay. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on. I'm buzzing, because I know that this is just going to be such a chatty and fun interview, so thanks
you
so much for joining me.
You just know it's going to be chaos.
I know. So can we have a little introduction to you and what you do for people who might not know you or follow you?
I overshare, like, professionally. I have no idea. I'm still really, like, uncomfortable with describing what I do because I'm never entirely sure. I write a bit. I create content. I have recently created an exercise positive space as, like, part of my Instagram work, and yeah, I basically talk about myself and embarrass myself and my loved ones on the internet, so great.
I love it. You're such a joy to follow, and you're, like, so much energy, and it all just comes through on your posts.
Thank
so I think
you.
That's pretty cool, even if there isn't an official word for it. What you're doing is great. I love it.
Thank you.
So this season, we are talking about all the things that we wish we were taught in school. And your first one links into what you were just saying about having, like, an exercise positive community. Because the first thing that you sent me was that you wish that you were taught that fitness is so much more than being thin or running around a track. Girls' sport is not prioritized, and we come out of school with such little understanding of exercise and such bad relationships with our bodies, which is utterly shit because endorphins are life. My relationship with my body turned on its head when I found the right kind of exercise for me, and I wish that had happened sooner. I've literally just done an episode with my sister, actually, and she was trying to get me to stop asking her questions. So she was asking me what I wish I'd been taught in school. And I said the same thing. It was, like, one of my first things was, like, I wish I'd realized that exercise wasn't just about fat loss, because that's all I ever thought it was about.
Yeah. But that's not, you know, you're saying, like, oh, I wish I'd realized this. It's like you had no tools with which to make that realization, because the only exposure we really had, I think, to, like, fitness was very much really the magazines, right? So, like, I don't know about your school, but my school didn't give a shit about my physical education because I was shit at it. And, you know, like, if you're, you know, wonder kid or super athletic or amazing or whatever, you know, they might take an interest in you, and there is space for you to go and do, like, high jump and shit. But for people like me, I was like, oh, I'm on my period again for, like, the 8th week in a row. They're like, okay, yeah, fine. And I literally was sort of left, you know, in terms of, like, organized sport, I would just sort of bailed. And then the only real access I had to it was what I read and what I saw. And that was all, like, if you do 100 sit-ups every night, you'll burn your belly fat and he'll fall in love with you. And I'm like, cool. So, like, I did none of the sort of mandatory sport at school because it made me want to cry. And I did shit calorie counting, feckin' stupid fad diet exercise crunching bollocks, and came out of school just absolutely hating me. Like, because my relationship with exercise and with myself was just so wonky.
Yeah, that's so funny you say that. I literally used to do the exact same. So lots of my friends are really sporty. So as you say, they'd get really pushed and the school really wanted them to do well because they were like athletes. Whereas I hated sport, but you were made to do like a game activity like two or three times a week. Mm. So I used to do recreational trampolining and I was like the only person that signed up. So I would literally just run off and have cigarettes. And no one, I never used to get told off really for missing games. I'd just pretend, I'd be like, oh, I thought I had a music lesson.
Yeah, because, you know, it's like, it's almost a joke that, you know, school, that for most of us, exercise at school is like, I mean, I have been laughing with a friend of mine recently because we were the same. Like, we did cross country one term and literally we would get to like the end of the road and then have a cigarette and we'd always get caught. And it was, and now when I talk to her, she's like, as if like you're running marathons. I'm like, yeah, I know, like hilarious. And it's the weirdest thing, but it was just like the most accepted thing that, you know, we were all just not doing it. But then at the same time, we were expected to be, or we put this pressure on ourselves to be super thin and toned and have low body fat and all the stuff that sort of like diet culture and society wanted from us. And it was a real head fuck, right?
Yeah, and do you know what else is weird that I realised in like later years was that our school, I'm sure it's not the same now, but the boys were allowed to go to the gym that had all these weights and stuff, but the girls' gym was upstairs and it literally just had like treadmills and Bosu balls. And all of our guy friends had a really innate understanding of exercise and food. And I think it would have been detrimental to trying to understand it as much as they did. But we almost weren't taught like the basic kind of science behind why exercise is important and like why it's important to grow muscles and why it's really good to be strong. Whereas the guys would like train that from a really early age. Like that's so fucked up when you think about that.
It's actually the difference between like men or boys and girls is physical education is so, it's something I find absolutely fascinating. And it's something that like I'm really passionate about because if you look at like how little boys are brought up, they have the like universal language of football basically, and they can kick a ball about, they've got something in common, and it's always a sort of fun recreational thing to do. Really, we don't have a sort of a comparative, like we don't have like a parallel. So they kind of have this as fun, but then they also get encouraged to be competitive. Whereas in women and girls, it's just not encouraged. You know, it's not, you don't want to be seen to be that passionate because it's not cool. And competitive is, sorry, being competitive is just like randomly hiccuping. Yeah. It's just, it's competitiveness, I'm just making up words now. It's not encouraged in young girls. And so, you know, even if there is a real sort of promise in a young girl, you know, athletically or whatever, she may not pursue it because it's not cool to have that interest or, you know, whatever it is. So on a sort of innate level, we drop off. You can see the drop off in interest in sports for girls. It happens pretty much, I mean, I guess the minute your boobs start coming in, but you know, there'll be a specific age on that. But then you're right, like going on, and as you get older, the boys are in the gym and they're supporting their rugby training or their football training or their whatever they do with the appropriate weightlifting, and they're learning about their muscles and they're doing it right. We also had a gym at my school, but like, oh my God, it was awful because the boys would all stare at the treadmills because that's the way the gym was laid out. So I would go and stand on a treadmill and I would run, and I would run until I'd burnt the amount of calories that were in a Maltesers bag. And then I would go again because that was what I thought exercise was. So I was like, good, I can go and eat some Maltesers now. And it psyched myself up to high heaven because I'd be absolutely terrified that I'd have to go and do this run whilst they were watching me. And it was so weird.
Yeah, that's so true. That was such a big part of mine. Like I would get so caught up in like whether my legs didn't look right to go. And like, I wasn't really ever thinking about the exercise itself. It was always about like what I would look like to other people. I'd be mortified if I was unfit. I just thought it was the most shaming thing if you like got out of breath when you were like running around. So it was just the biggest barrier to exercise was me feeling so insecure about it. And what you were saying before about kids growing up is so true. Like all of my male friends have some kind of like physical activities that they bond around. Even now, like in the summer, they'll be like, let's go and play cricket, or like, let's go and play squash. Whereas me and my girls will obviously, now that we're adults, usually just go and get drunk. But when we were younger, it'd be like, let's go shopping, or let's have a sleepover and do each other's makeup. There's nothing wrong with those things. But physical exercise was never tied into fun for us. It was always, like you were pointing out, like a form of punishment or as a means to reward yourself with Maltesers or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to boys will be strong and girls will be small. And that's, you know, whether or not you're taught it so explicitly, that's kind of the messaging that we were exposed to. And I find it very interesting watching people progress into adulthood and try and establish a better relationship with exercise, because, you know, we are encouraged to exercise. I think it has been pivotal. Like, it has changed my life. I can't tell you, like, the transformation in me that exercise has brought. Mm. And I just wish I'd had access to this earlier. And I genuinely feel like I didn't. And I feel like so many of us didn't, because trying to carve this path for yourself when you've got no resources available to you, you've got no information, and to top it all off, you're so embarrassed just to like be alive and to be seen to be trying, or, you know, to maybe fail or whatever. It's coconuts. But then, well, but I don't know, because now I hope it's changing, and I've started this other thing which is called the Have a Goes, and it's all about just trying and not caring if you're bad at it, and all these things that I wish we'd done sooner, and actually going back to kind of having fun with it, which is what it should have been from way earlier on, you know?
So when did you have that transition? Like, when did exercise become something that you found joy in versus something that you sort of dreaded?
I think, like, I'm kind of making it sound like I left school and then, like, just everything turned to glitter and it was fine, because that was not what happened. Like, I left school, I was legally able to get drunk and smoke, which I did pretty full time for like a few years. And then it was a kind of weird slip into like a complete transformation, because I did leave school, and I know everyone says they couldn't run for the bus, but I, not only could I not run for the bus, I would not run for the bus. I'm like, that would be humiliating. It would be foul. I'm not doing it. But at the same time, I was buying shit, tea, weight loss products. I was falling for every single marketing thing. I was so unhappy. I was battling with like the messiest relationship with food. And it's a really weird, because when I look back, I'm like, God, I was so wild and whatever. I'm like, I wasn't wild, I was miserable. And it's really odd. But I started cycling a bit, and I don't want to pretend that like I was any good at that. But my mom is involved and was one of the founder patrons for Help for Heroes. And at my 18, the day I turned 18, my mom did her first Ironman competition.
Wow.
Which is a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike ride, and 26-mile run. Like, and she had been a couch potato the whole way through my life. So I kind of watched her make this incredible, I don't even want to call it a transformation. I mean, it was, you know, she completely changed her life age 50. And I think that was incredibly inspiring. But for me, the change didn't really come until last year, when I signed up to run Edinburgh Marathon in May, despite like being a shit runner. And for the first time, it just became so much more about what my body could do than what it looked like. And the numbers before, you know, I'd counted so many calories, and then it stopped being about that, and it started being about the distance that I was covering. And it just completely, it was the same thing, but a different perspective. And it just changed my life. And now, I mean, I'm training for my first ultra marathon, which is exhausting. But I perversely am so incredibly happy, because I just look at this body, which is the same hunk of flesh it's always been. And I'm just like, shit, you're fantastic. Like, look at what you're achieving. And you look like what you know, literally, who gives a shit what you look like? Because look what you're doing.
I think that must have been so cool to see your mum doing that, because it's almost like an awakening. Like, she probably had the same messaging given to her, and you know, then she's like found something that's given her this new lease on life. But I just can't get over, because as we're talking, you've literally just done a half marathon this morning, and like, I very much got into exercise when I was at uni and got into like weight training. But running, I think, is just, when it comes to like mental health, I think seems to have like the biggest correlation in terms of like, there must be something to do with the endurance and like the actual mental strength that takes to get through like such long distances. Do you think that is true, or do you think it'd be any exercise?
I do think it's any exercise, honestly, but I think it's a chicken and the egg thing, right? Because it's really hard to enjoy something that's really, really fucking difficult, right? So I wasn't enjoying it, particularly when I couldn't get to the end of my road, and I live by this pub, and there would always be men outside smoking and jeering and being blokey. I'd be like, oh God, don't look at me. And it was awful. So, you know, I don't want to be like, oh, I slipped, you know, that day I pulled on my trainers, like my life changed, because that's bullshit, really. But I think the journey, and I hate that term, but the journey has been, I was talking to my friend about this the other day, like when you're doing, even, you know, and for me at the minute, it's ultra marathon training, but it's the same with couch to 5K. I mean, it doesn't matter about your distance, because for you, it's the challenge, right? You have to generate your own positivity in a way that you really haven't had to do before, because you're out there on your own, probably, but this is your legs and your head and your body and your challenge, and you're doing this for you, and it's you that's got to do it. And I think it's a really cool chance for people to spend time with themselves in a whole new way. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense, but yeah, and it's fresh air, which helps. But yeah.
No, I think that's a really good way of putting it. Like, it kind of lets you work through things. And I also think it's quite therapizing in some senses, in that you've just got to focus on this task and you're kind of like surviving, getting through the run, and all of the noise and the external things that kind of litter your brain normally. Like, normally my brain is just constantly flipping back between like worrying about stuff and whatever. And when I'm running, I literally can't think about anything except like, just put your other foot in front of your foot. And that is really cathartic for me, because I find it very difficult to switch off that little like voice in the back of your head that's constantly like worrying about whatever I've done or said, or
overthinking. The funny thing is, actually, there's something that comes up a lot on the Have a Go page that I do, is that, you know, people say, because, well, the thing is, right, you can't enjoy running if you're going to beat yourself up over your pace and getting a stitch and having a bad day. You know, it's not fun if the pressure is sky high and you're beating yourself up. And if, you know, it's like you're standing behind yourself with a big stick and whacking yourself for not performing at your absolute best, right? That's not fun. I mean, it might be fun for someone, but it's like not fun for me. And so a massive part of this for me has been like have the damn carrot. Like, you're doing great, you're fucking trying, you're out there, like, that's great. Like, you know, this crazy expectations we put on ourselves, and it's like, oh, I've had a bad run because I had to walk, or oh, I failed because I stopped, you know, 3K in. I'm like, you didn't fail, you went on a 3K run. Like, fine, you were planning a 5K, but you did a 3K. But your run finishes when you finish it. You can walk on a run, you've still been on a run. There's one thing I know with absolute certainty, and it's that only tossers ask you how fast you ran your marathon in. Like, since I said I did a marathon, I was like, cool, you did a marathon. And then I meet some people and they're like, what time are you doing? I'm like, oh, you're one of those. Like, I understand. And it's this, like, we put this crazy expectation on ourselves that, you know, it doesn't count if we're not giving it 100%. And that's absolute bollocks, because that would apply if we were trying to burn fat, but it doesn't if we're trying to get endorphins and be happy and make ourselves proud. And yeah, so it's kind of it's like finding a whole new sport. Like, there's running, and then there's like this running. And this running I love.
Yeah. And also, I think, like, that was one of the first things that helped me, was because I would set out to go on a run and then I would shoot out, out the door, and then think, oh, it's not very quick, and I'd literally stop. And then now more often than not, if I do go on a run and I think, just take it slow, you're going to be fine, I do like my best run because I'm not trying to, as you say, like set some ridiculous time limit or whatever it might be for myself that is just so unachievable. And I do that thing now where I do that really positive self-talk when I'm like, well, you made it out. Whereas before, years ago, I was so terrified of running that I wouldn't even go. So for me, doing like 3K out of 5K is such a huge achievement. But that's taken me years of learning how to be much more self-compassionate in order to tap into that, because before it would have just been another thing to beat myself up about, that I'd just done another thing wrong.
Yeah. And that's not your fault or your failing, because that's how exercise was spoken about, really, wasn't it? And it's fascinating because we're not competitive necessarily in terms of like beating other people, but we are with ourselves, and we are pretty mean to ourselves most of the time, which I hate. I mean, I'm now like, I look like a full nutter. Like you know, it's me coming behind you because I'm running down the Thames path going, you can do it, you can do it. And I'm talking to myself. Like when I struggle, I say the affirmations out loud. I'm like, you're doing it, you're doing great, you can do this. And people literally look at me like, oh, yes, a weirdo. I don't care because I'm running away from them.
So lots of your stuff that you share on Instagram is to do with body image. And I think it's super helpful and it's really unfiltered. And it's kind of you, I guess, showing the world what you wish you could have seen. But how's your personal relationship with social media? Because I always find this such an interesting conversation. Because on the one hand, it's all kind of dependent on who you follow, I guess. But it can be one of the most detrimental places for people's mental health, especially when it comes to self-esteem and body image. Yeah. But on the other hand, it's also one of the most incredible places for people being vulnerable and people sharing and, you know, trying to uplift each other. How do you find it as a space to navigate?
So I love it. Like, first and foremost, I follow the best fucking people. Like, I wake up every morning and I look at like what my girls have done. I'm like, yes, like, look at you go. And I love it. And it's so exciting to me. And I am so empowered and inspired by the people that I follow. And I just think it's so educational and I have the best job in the whole wide world. But you're right, in terms of like the content that I create is very often stuff I wish I'd seen, because although for me, like, oh my God, sorry, I got a frog in my throat, fun. for me, like, Instagram genuinely has changed my beauty ideals. Like, I grew up consuming, I mean, the content that we consumed when we grew up really was magazines. Like, I was really, like, into, like, Ms. and 17 Again, and then and then later, like, Cosmo and whatever. And, you know, Kate Moss was like revered, right? Like, I grew up with the beauty ideal being size zero. That was what I considered to be beautiful. Since I've used Instagram, I see like my entire relationship with beauty is just completely changed. I'm like, oh my God, like, look at all these like sensational people, and they're different like genders and sizes and races, and it's just completely opened my eyes and changed my life and my perception, and it's enabled me to have the most wonderful relationship with my body. Oh, sorry, I got a text. So I mean, yeah, for that it's been incredibly positive, but I'm super duper aware that I have curated for myself an incredibly positive space, because I really knew that I needed that. And in the same way that I consume the content that was provided to me by the magazines in the noughties, there are young women, and my sort of priority when it comes to this sort of thing, there are young women who are consuming the content that, you know, that on Instagram that perhaps is not ensuring that they have a positive relationship with the app. Something that distresses me a great deal is filters and the extent to which they are taking over. And TikTok trends and Instagram trends that teenagers are looking at that parents haven't got a clue about. And I'm super duper wary of that. So for me, it's incredibly positive. Personally, but in a work capacity, my entire focus and drive is around trying to ensure that it it can be more positive for the other users, because there, for every, you know, shiny side of the coin, there's the other one. So yeah, what, I don't know. I mean, my relationship with it is fascinating.
Well, I think you do it so well. And I also think that what people sometimes don't realize is that by you, like even for you, so for me as well as a creator, the more honest I used to be so hepped up about like what I look like in every photo, like if there was even one imperfection in the way that my body looked or whatever. Whereas now I'm just like, oh yeah, that's fab. And that's changed my own relationship with my body, because I'm no longer holding myself to some fake standard. So not only just like consuming content, but actually when you're putting up content of yourself, if it is really you, like even if it's just doing stories without a filter, for instance, and not wearing any makeup, it might feel like a scary thing to do. But the more you get used to what you actually look like, the more comfortable you feel within yourself.
Oh my God, 100%. It's the weirdest thing, because I often think that the people that suffer the most for using filters are themselves, because how can you, if you, and I never, ever, ever want to bash an individual for making that choice, because you do you, right? Everyone is free to do entirely what they want to do. Societally, I think we have to look at these things, because I just think the access that we have to them, if you can pick this shiny version of yourself, like, hell yeah, like, I get it. Like, it completely makes sense that you would want to portray the best version of yourself. But I think the danger is that once you've done that and you put your phone away and you look in the mirror, you comparatively look dull and shit. And all the things that you got to erase on the internet are right there, and they're your reality. And I just think that fucks with people's heads. And I think we have to be careful. I watched, I think it was The Social Dilemma, and I know everybody watched The Social Dilemma, but I cannot stop thinking about that line. Like, there are two industries where companies call their customers, users, and that's drugs and social media. So although it's super fun and it's not going anywhere and it's a massive part of all of our lives, you know, it's, they used to smoke on aeroplanes until they knew better. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I just think we've got to kind of be a bit careful with how we look at, and how we operate and that sort of thing.
That is such good. I actually completely forgot about that line, but you're right. I remember watching that and being like, fuck, that is so true.
Oh my God, I'm basically a heroin addict.
Yeah, but basically, yeah. Yeah. It is like that.
I am. I wake up in the morning and I check my, and I see people online, they're like, oh, I put like my Do Not Disturb on and I have like half an hour meditation and journaling in the morning. I'm like, good for you. I get up and I turn on my phone and I scroll through Instagram, and that's my life. So
I have started doing it so much more in the pandemic, because I used to be better when you like had stuff to do. Like, I'd have such a busy day ahead of me. Whereas now, because it's like, well, I'm going to get up and then I'm going to go and sit in my living room and do my work. I do that. It's actually, I need to stop doing it. It's because it's so mindless. So I honestly wake up, my thumb, I hold the phone to my screen, my phone unlocks and I'm on Instagram. I haven't even like done a wee. It's so bad.
It's so bad. But then I think, if we use a smoking analogy, I'm like, right, fine. So we're all addicted. Let's just like, let's vape or whatever. I don't know. Like, let's just do like something a little bit better. So, follow better people. So for me, at least, I'm like, okay, so I'm consuming a lot of shit here, but at least it's like good shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's the platform shit, but the people are good.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Okay, so on to your second thing that you wish you'd been taught in school. And I feel like this is going to be such a common one in this series. I did actually touch on it briefly with my first guest, but I think I want to talk about it again, because I think we just can't hammer this home enough. So you were like, I wish I'd been taught that girls can enjoy sex. Basically, I'm coming for the PSHE curriculum. It was taught in such a wonky way. Men learn about condoms and women watch videos of childbirth. Issues of consent, female pleasure and contraception should be mandatory and inclusive. I'd never thought about the fact that we watch videos of childbirth. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, I have to say, like, I hear this conversation being had by much better and smarter women than me. And I'm like, okay, like, it's super good for me, because it's really interesting and to listen and to learn. But I just think back to my own PSHE lessons, and I'm like, oh, I'm very fucked up. Like, why didn't I realize this sooner? Because I remember when we were taught about periods and they asked the boys to leave and we'd sat there and listened to them like talking about wet dreams. So I'm like, we know that you jizz in your sleep, but when my uterus lining shreds, like that's the line, is it? Like, it's so weird. And I don't know, I'm sure you follow her because she's amazing, but Jess Megan, conversations that she opens on Instagram about periods, I'm like, oh my God. Like, I'm not, you know, a period positive person. I don't even have periods at the moment because I've got the coil in, but I look at the way she has the conversations about periods on her Instagram and I'm like, this is insane. Like the way we were taught to be so ashamed of them is absolutely fascinating. Men will watch like Gladiator and Game of Thrones and like blood and guts and gore and everything. But the tampon adverts had to have blue ink because they didn't want to show blood on the TV. And it's like, oh my God, what? It's so weird. So now it's really been like an awakening quite recently because I don't think I realized how weird it was at the time. But we were taught that we were going to make babies and they were going to have orgasms. And that's really stressed me out.
No, you're right. And I didn't actually follow her before, but I've just written her name down. There's so many things that I wish that I'd been taught when it came to sex, like periods definitely, but I feel like the lucky thing I had was coming from a mum who's a nurse and having two older sisters. I feel like I was always quite chill about periods in a way that I feel like lots of other people weren't. And it's one of those things that, you know, when you first learn about feminism and you start to see all these things around you about periods, and it just makes you so angry. And I remember like making it my mission to like always talk to all the guys in my life about periods. I live with a guy when I first moved to London. I would literally always tell him when I was on my period and like talk to him about my menstrual cup because I was like, you fucking need to know what is going on. Yeah. But even the conversation, like you're saying, around like sex for women was centered around childbirth and like how to manage your periods, but nothing about pleasure. Like there wasn't one conversation about like, also this feels good for you. I don't think they even mentioned the clitoris.
No, I didn't know anything about it. And I think like, and this is a conversation that honestly, like I'm out, where I'm going to take this is somewhere that I'm probably out of my depth to talk about. But I think that it's such a, if you can't talk about female pleasure, and we never talk about that, then boys grow up to think, and we can't blame them because this is what they're taught. I mean, we can, it's complicated, but they go out into the world never prioritizing female pleasure. And that makes the lines around consent and enjoyable sex so blurred because it's not this like fun act between two consenting adults. It's the man doing it. It's just, it's such an odd, I don't even know how to do, it's just, it's so weird. And you know, it's not like we're going straight out of school and then having sex to make a baby. You know, there's a lot that happens in between, like, and that's where it's just so complicated and it needs such a the whole education, sex education, needs such a revamp. Because I mean, a revamp, it sounds like, oh, making that gospel. Like, we're going to make this fun. But it just needs serious alterations because I just think girls grow up with such low expectations of what sex is. And as a result, I don't think they respect themselves and their needs or their wants enough. And I think it causes a lot of problems. And it's something that worries me a bit. The more I talk about it and open these conversations up on my platforms, I'm just like, oh shit, like this is not good.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
No, you're right. And also exactly what you're saying about how you were like, oh, we can't blame them. I do think that almost it's difficult. Like the boys that were brought up in our generation, we all bought into the same thing. So like, even if you were consenting to something, you weren't consenting to what we would now as like more grown up women be like, oh, that would be good sex. You're consenting to what you're taught is sex, which is basically servicing a man or like making sure that.
Yeah.
So it's difficult then because I think that probably there's loads of younger guys who've maybe learned more about feminism or learned about female sexuality who probably feel loads of guilt around lots of the sex they have because it was all just so misguided. And as you say, like some of that obviously they have to be held accountable for, but some of it is just, of course, that was what was going to happen if that's what we're being taught in school.
Yeah. And they, you know, the access that they have to sex is so different to the access women have because, or girls have, and stop calling them women because they're girls, but you know, we didn't have access to, I just, you know, the boys had porn and they talked about porn and they watched porn. There was no porn for women and there was no porn for girls. And even if there was, it wouldn't have been appropriate for them to watch it because, you know, the way that it was spoken about was super misogynistic. And so not only did boys grow up being like, okay, well, this is something that I'm going to do and this is the condom that I'm going to use because that's all I've been taught or, you know, whatever. But then they, you know, they've watched porn and so they're like, this, she'll love it if I like jizz on her face. And then girls are like, oh, well, fuck, I don't know because all I know is that one day I'm going to shove a baby out of there. And, you know, it's just, it's so messy. We're just... It's, and you know, like I know we're British and we're prudish and we don't really talk about this stuff. And it is actually still quite new to me to talk about, really, because like, I'm not sort of scared to talk about it, but it is something that the more I educate myself, the more amazing women that I follow, the more I read, the more I'm like, oh my God, there's so many things. And I just, yeah, I can just see how intrinsically linked all of this is. And you know, I think sport falls into, you know, what we were talking about earlier, the physical education comes into sex education and health and mental health. It's all connected. So yes, yeah, it's super interesting, but it's a sort of PSHE side of things. It's like the not academic side of sport, so important.
It's interesting that you're saying that they're so linked because when it comes to sport, like we were both saying how we were so worried about how we would look when we were exercising for one. So worrying about how desirable we would look. And then also the only reason we would do exercise was to become more desirable by becoming smaller. And then with sex, again, it is so tied in because it's all about succumbing to the male gaze and being attractive to men and basically servicing men's needs. And when you think about how sinister that's the undertone of the education we're having as young girls, as young as 10, 11, it just seems so much more sinister, doesn't it?
I think it is, you know, it is incredibly sinister. Like, that's the thing with, and it's really weird, right? So doing Instagram for a job, and I'm sure you'll know this, it's you're made to feel like it's a bit of like a silly job. And I do feel sometimes, you know, when I talk about social media, and I have talked about social media quite a lot in the mainstream media as part of, you know, my work, it's still like seen as so trivial and silly and something that like, no, you know, it's just those gals, like narcissists, you know, like they're all just being so like frivolous and, you know, one day they'll get a proper job and then they'll know the meaning of hard work or they'll marry or whatever, whatever. Right. So it's still not taken seriously. And it's a real thing that I'm having to have with myself where the conversations that I open up on my platform and that I see other people having, I'm like, no, I need to take this shit seriously. And this is, it's really funny because in my head, I'm still like, oh, you know, what am I like just, you know, sharing like stupid videos on Instagram or whatever. But actually the conversations that we're having are so important. And, you know, you don't want to be like super serious all the time because still the connotations of feminism are like, oh, well, she's a man hating, like bra burning like Birkenstock wearing, blah, 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 you know, like the connotations are so bad. And there's still a part of me that has to like force myself into being like, no, what you're saying is important. This isn't silly. It doesn't, you know, you're not this sort of stereotype. And even if you were, who gives a fuck? This is a really important conversation. And it's, I try and strike a balance between, you know, not coming across like I'm always ranting about it and always moaning about it. But I do feel as we peel back every single layer that it's misogyny. It's extraordinary. You know, it's crazy what we've been taught and what we've grown up with. And yeah, okay, so we can work now and, you know, we're allowed to own our own houses and stuff. And it's pretty great to be a woman, but it's like, and you know, I know a lot of people will tell you that like feminism's done, but it's like, no, I'm not sending my kid. I haven't got any kids, but I'm not going to send my kids out into this like cesspit of trouble. So yeah, it's weird, but like it's because it is so important. And I think what just feels weird is like that we're the ones talking about, like, I'm like, how many adults came before us? Like, why has no one talked about this before? Do you know what I mean? Why has no one fixed this yet?
Well, I think what's so interesting about social media, I think there's so many different layers, but you're right. Everyone trivializes kind of being an influencer, which is an annoying term that I use because by dinner, the fact that I do adverts, I technically am that thing, but it's definitely language which is designed to make women feel like what they're doing isn't important. But as you've said, some of the conversations that I have on my Instagram and the people that I engage with through this podcast, like they're really intellectual conversations. And I, again, am coming into contact with this information for the very first time via the means of having a platform. And I'm sure there definitely were countless women before us. It's just that through probably down to privilege and access and whatever, women, actually, it's because of the progress that those women have made that we've then been able to have these jobs where we have platforms and finally, you know, the freedom to discuss these things out in the open. Because I can't even imagine that 10 years ago, women, even if they were talking about it, would have actually been allowed the agency to host these conversations about whatever kind of topics that we quite casually talk about now.
And I think that's because Instagram and influencing is a female-led space. So we have the space to have these conversations. And literally, I don't think there have been the spaces to have these with such a platform before because the women that came before us have had to make their voices heard in really rooms full of men. And
exactly.
Yeah, it's awesome, actually. Like, you know, it's really cool that we're so lucky, aren't we?
It is. Yeah, no, exactly. It's so cool when you think about it. When you look back, I always think that when you think about feminism and how far we've come and all the women that came before us, but then there's obviously so many things to do and to go, especially like when it comes to intersectionality and not just thinking about like us as white women, but obviously all those other people that have like different intersections of privilege. We've got so far to come.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel that, I think that's what I was trying to sort of say, but really badly before. And that's pretty much like what this point is I just feel massively underqualified to be talking about these things. And you know, it's still, you know, when something sits kind of wonky with you, you're like, oh God. When I think back at the education, I'm like, weird that I like saw a woman having a baby, but I didn't know where the clitoris was, like strange. But like, I know where my ovaries are, but like, I don't know where my G-spot is, like strange. You know, like, these things feel weird, but you know, it's kind of having the confidence to stand up and be like, you know, this was definitely a thing. And I do feel massively underqualified to like call this, you know, call it out. Hello, you know, just to even have these conversations. But I think that's kind of, it's magic because I've learned so much from the women around me. And I'm just, yeah, I'm really grateful for it because I think, you know, we have access to women that we maybe probably would never have found because, you know, we do sort of, you know, you leave a school and then you go into like, you stay with your same friends and you kind of stay in your same bubble. And if you do a job or whatever, you know, you wouldn't have access to this. And the education that we are afforded now as grown-ups by being able to follow people with different experiences is just, it's great. And you can see where you're unified and where there are still differences. And it's just, you know, it's keeping us all like open to learning, and it's really cool. Like,
and also kind of irrespective of qualifications to be able to talk, but the more that women talk about the stuff, the less shame you feel. And I now go in all guns blazing into any conversation with any group of women about anything, whereas I definitely would feel like ideas about shame about certain things that now with any set of my friends, I just don't give a shit. Whereas that's only been made possible by listening in to other women's conversations where they have like no holds barred conversations about sex, whether it's like a podcast, whether it's talking about masturbation, whatever it might be. Even just by listening to other people, you can borrow a bit of their confidence, and that just keeps spreading like wildfire, which yeah. I think is amazing.
Oh my God, yeah. Like it's, you know, there's stuff that you wouldn't like, I don't know. And that, this was goes back to the desirability thing, but like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I have IBS, and that was such a source of shame to me. I'm like, oh my God, like everyone's going to know that I shit. And I remember like the best thing I ever learned was my mum telling me once on the way home from school, she's like, even the queen poos. And I was like, that's going to change my life. And now it's like, I've just grown up to be like, well, I'm really sorry that you don't find my shit desirable, sir, but it's a massive inconvenience and I want to talk about it, or, you know, whatever it is. Like it's prioritizing like myself and my needs and my health or whatever it is in any given moment, or even my interest in, and sort of, you know, replacing where I would have not been too confident enough to like have a conversation because I'd have been like, oh, well, someone's going to judge me or whatever, or so they won't find me attractive or whatever. I'm like, okay, well, that's fine. I'll lose that because I'd rather have the conversation. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, definitely. It's completely really cool. Agree.
Like, yeah, we get our priorities. Like it's, they all change. It's really fun.
Yeah. And it gives you so much power. Like I think that's one of the most amazing things that it's really hard to do when you're at school, because like being a teenager psychologically, like everything is about you. That's kind of like at the stage your brain is at, where you kind of, it is so important to be popular and it's so important to fit in and you're desperate for that. And then as you start to get older, you realize how freeing it is to be exactly who you want to be, because then the people around you who resonate with that will find you. Whereas if you're spending a whole life kind of trying to fit into anyone else's expectations of you, you'll constantly be disappointed by the people around you because you're technically not being yourself.
That's been a real like learning thing for me. And because I think I always had confidence, but I think it was probably just bravado. Like I wasn't confident at school, and I thought that I was too fat and too ugly and not funny and not this and not that. And, you know, my thoughts about myself were just so relentlessly negative. And it's, and I did, like, I just tried so hard to fit in. And it's the weirdest and most liberating thing when you kind of grow. And again, this, and you know, I'm making it sound like I walked out of school aged 18 and everything went glittery, because it didn't. And, you know, this is stuff that I've learned over the last like nearly 10 years. But it's, and actually this is something that I've really learned this year. And it's that like what other people think of me is none of my business. And that's a really hard thing at school, because being popular is like super important. But as you get older, it's like you just, I don't know, you just, I just keep being like, I have not got that long hair. Like, who knows? And I just want to be with people that make my heart happy. And, you know, I didn't even care before, you know, when I was trying really hard to impress all these people, like, I didn't even care what they were like. I didn't like a lot of them, but that never mattered, because it was more important that they liked me. And I'm like, why? That was weird. Like, why was I spending time with people that I didn't like, not being myself, because I wanted them to like me, when I could have just found people that I actually liked who liked me? And that would have all been so much easier. But I mean, you know, that, like, why do the easy thing? You know, like as an adult, it's just, it's prioritizing your own needs. Like I need to be people that make me happy. And I wish I'd come to that sooner.
Oh, totally. It's so funny you said that, because I literally was talking to my friend the other day about dating, and I was saying how I realized I used to go on a date, and even if I didn't fancy a guy, I would be so desperate for them to fancy me that would be all I'd be thinking about. I wouldn't even have actually thought about like, do I like them? I just wanted them to like me.
It's like so weird. Like,
it's so weird.
So weird. And I think that's a thing about being a woman as well, where you just, you know, it's really important that you're like palatable And you know, you're not going to cause anyone, you're not going to cause any problems, are you? You know, you're going to just be like good, right? Just be good and quiet. And it's the weirdest thing. And I feel like not a butterfly, because that makes it sound like I've had like a real glow up, but I feel like a bear, like a bear that's coming out of hibernation, and I'm just like stretching, and I'm like, look how big, like look how far my arms go, like they just go to all these good places, and I get to be in control of it. And it's the most, that's a really bad analogy, but it's the most like freeing, the butterfly one would have worked better, it's the most freeing thing to just be able to like, it doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make you unlikable. It doesn't make you selfish. It just makes you happy. And that, I never prioritized happiness for myself when I was at school, because it was all about making other people happy, I guess, or other people thinking I was cool or whatever.
Yeah, I think we just have a really warped understanding of what's important. And then as you start to get older and the world kind of creeps in more and more and you have more lived experiences, you realize that like, some stuff just isn't as important as it felt.
Yeah. And I wonder, like, I do think for myself now, I'm like, I wonder if I didn't do Instagram, would I have come to this these realizations now? Because I really think, you know, like, I've become a real sucker for like those, I guess they're memes, but I'm like, God, they're like hitting me right in the feels. Like, they're completely changing my entire perception of myself. And I found I have a life coach now, which feels incredibly American, but I don't hate it. And and I'm being open about my mental health and in just in ways that I never would have been before, ever. Because, you know, I didn't want to be, I think I wanted to be interesting, but I never wanted to be complicated. And now I'm realizing as an adult, like I'm an incredibly complicated person, and that's fine. Because women aren't just like 2D fucking like magazine pictures. We're like 3D whole pooing, laughing, like people, you know?
No, I completely agree. I also think that sometimes I'm like, I wonder where I'd be, because I've learned so much from having constant feedback from people, which sometimes isn't nice. But yeah, I do think as a platform, weirdly, it's kind of made me grow in the best way. Maybe because you almost become responsible for other people. I don't know. It does. It is an interesting, I think it's a very interesting position to be in. It definitely could be very harmful, but I also feel the same in that, like, I wonder what kind of woman I would be if I hadn't started creating a platform.
I'm like spiraling now thinking, I'm like, shit, like, where would I be? Did you read Matt Haig's The Midnight Library yet?
No, do I need to read it?
Yeah, you need to read it. But it's a lot of the what ifs, and it's actually it was an incredibly profound book. I can't stop thinking about it with that in mind, because I have been very anxious throughout my whole life. I just think I didn't have a name for what it was before. And a lot of my life now is about managing those feelings. And yeah, that's, you know, that, yeah, the book really helped with that, I think. And I mean, lots of things help. Running helps and talking helps, and you know, realizing when I'm drinking too much wine helps, and you know, like there's loads of stuff that I can do, like, you know, to manage it. But I found that book to be just incredibly, I keep thinking about it, I'm like, ooh, like, wow. And I love books that make you do that.
Oh yeah, I know the concept of it. It does sound really good. I can't believe no one's ever done that idea before, because it's such a fun idea to think about, of like all the lives you could have led.
Yeah, I just have to put like a time cap on myself for like thinking time about it. Like if I think for like too long, I'm like, whoa, like
existential crisis.
Yeah, literally. I'm like, oh my, because like there's nothing that scares me more than space. I'm like, it's so big. So
oh no.
I have to stop myself. Otherwise I'm like down a hole.
Okay, well, I'm going to bring you back down to earth with the third thing that you wish you were taught in school. And that is how to do your fucking tax returns.
Profound, this one came from like somewhere deep. I'm such a fucking shit adult all the time. Like everything I do, I just, you know, like I get, like every time I drive into London, I forget to pay a congestion charge. And I live here, and I've always lived here. Like, I'm like, how have I done that? And, you know, like the council tax, like months happen so quickly, and I'm like, oh God, it's council tax time again. And, you know, and then it's tax return time, and I'm like, I don't get it. Like, and why did no one, you know, why didn't this come up before? And why are microwaves that bad? You know, I have so many questions about that just should have come up sooner. But yeah, the tax thing is a real stickler, because I just think, how are you expecting people to go out and make money and bust balls, whatever the expression is, and then, you know, and then just leave them? Like, go out there, start your career, and then you'll probably go to prison because you won't have paid your taxes.
Nothing reduces me to tears more than a long phone call with my accountant. So he rang me the other day because I've got a business card now, and I'd like accidentally done some personal on my business and business on my business or whatever, I got it wrong. And he started explaining all this stuff to me, and my boyfriend, I had him on speaker, my boyfriend was just nodding along, and I was slowly just like hyperventilating more and more because I didn't understand what the fuck's going on. And it was stressing out so much. And Matt was like, my boyfriend's like, it's actually very, very simple. You just got to do this. And I was like, oh, but in the phone call, I was like, oh, wow. So I've just like ruined my whole accounts. Like I don't understand any of it, and really makes me stressed.
It's really stressed. And you know, like I feel like it's an annoying thing, because there's sometimes where, and I really put myself down, because I'll be having a conversation with a grown-up and they'll say something and I'm like, no, like no idea. And so I have to ask them, like, can you say that in layman's terms? And I didn't even really know what layman's terms were. I was like, that'd be another language. But you know, it's not embarrassing, but it's frustrating, because like I have an interest in things. Like I'm an interested person. I read a bunch, like, you know, and still when there's stuff like, you know, accounts or whatever it is that's happening, and I'm just like, how do I not understand this? Like, I'm working with a lawyer for the first time at the moment about something, and he talks to me and I'm like, this might as well be Arabic. I have no idea what you're saying. And then I feel like such a fool to be like, okay, can you say it again? Can you say it again? So oftentimes I'm just like, yeah, okay, thanks. And then I go, like, well, that was terrible. That shouldn't have happened. And that annoys me, because, you know, that does come down to my own lack of confidence. But, you know, it's hard to be confident when you don't know and you feel a bit stupid. So, yeah, there's a bit of resentment for me. I'm just like, oh, God, I wish, you know, like, why did I learn so much algebra when I could have been like... But I mean...
I totally agree. And I think what you just said there is really important though. And it's something that I'm actually quite good at. And I used to think it was a silly thing, but I've realized I'm really good at asking people something if I don't understand it. And I used to think that was like a really annoying quality, but it's because I just really want to know. And I've actually learned that as an adult, being inquisitive and like saying when you don't know is actually a really good skill to have.
Absolutely.
Because lots of people don't ask, they feel it's embarrassing. And once you ask, like, someone else will go, oh, actually, yeah, I don't really know what that is. And then you all talk about it, rather than, I think half of adulting is walking around pretending you know what you're talking about and then just Googling it quietly. And then
you know what? Alex tells me to Google things all the time. Like, it's the most frustrating.
Oh.
Like, I'm like, oh, babe, I don't know. Like, can you connect the Wi-Fi? You know, do you know how to connect the Wi-Fi? He's like, can you just Google it? I'm like, no, that's why I'm asking you. Don't make me Google it. I'll be down this hole for like 5.5 hours and we both know it. It's going to really annoy me. But yes, I get super like anxious when someone tells me to Google it. But you're so right, because when I, you know, I've got the Have a Go page, and we say there's no such thing as a stupid question, because in fitness, you know, you really can be made to feel like an absolute moron if you do, you know, like, oh, what's a macro, and everyone just, you know, you can hear like a pin drop. So, you know, I think it's super important that we, you know, that we are able to ask questions. But there is something in me when it comes to business, and I've got to stop this, where I'm so silly, what am I like, sorry, you know. And I really like ham up the like dips thing. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I'm fine, you know. And it's a really like bad pattern that I find myself falling in when I feel out of my depth with something. So yeah, I'm going to work on that.
No, I think that's completely normal, because I think it's like almost trained within you, where you like go like you're never really taught about money when you're little, as a girl especially, and then all the language around money is sort of like spend and splurge and shopping spree, and men's is all like invest and save. And so I think then even then we kind of assume, even if I was just thinking back then, I was like, actually, I have learned loads about my finances recently, but I feel almost nervous to say that because there will still be so many things that I don't understand. And I think it's like we're falling back into that comfortable feeling of acting, like you said, like a silly little girl, because that's what we're brought up to believe, that, oh, oh, don't you worry about money. Like, it's not nothing to do with you. You just go and buy yourself a nice little dress or whatever.
That's actually super interesting because, I mean, even I actually looking at just like the dynamics in my own relationship, because, you know, they always say like that when they look at like job applications and stuff, you'll very often find like a man will apply for the job even if he hasn't got the qualifications, whereas a woman may not. You know, there's a quote about it or a statistic that I can't remember, and I actually look at that dynamic within like mine and Alex's relationship, because he goes for stuff with masses of confidence and not much necessarily to back it up, but then, you know, like I might be really super qualified and I'm like, nah, I'm just gonna sit this one out, like you go. And you know, I really don't let myself, I maybe just don't want to look like a fool, or I don't know what it is, but it's a real like confidence. And I think you're right, like we're just, you know, we weren't I don't know, like it still annoys me, like all the rhetoric surrounding women in work, it's still like boss babe and girl boss.
Oh yeah, I hate that.
I'm like, just, you know, and it's like, yeah, so that's probably why I feel like a bit of a twat sometimes. But it's interesting because again, we have a career that people don't necessarily take seriously. So it's, you know, it's kind of maybe sometimes I think I want to make the joke before somebody else makes it. Be like, oh, what, you know, like me and my silly job, you know, before they're like, oh, you and your silly job, and then I have like the burning shame of them saying I have a silly job, you know. It's so, yeah, I need to get over this. I'm realizing as I'm saying it out loud, I'm like, this isn't good. But
no, it's so true that I think that, and then I realize actually I handle negotiations on my own. I do, like, as we've just been saying, we do our own taxes, I handle all of my accounts. Like, we're very much a walking, talking marketing manager, like content creator, model, like everything we do is our own business, and you're not coddled at all in this industry. It's really like the Wild West. And so if you have an agency or something, you can be helped out, but it's actually in some ways very difficult to kind of manage this kind of career as opposed to something where perhaps there's a very structured layers to it, and you know, you've got someone telling you what to do. That, like, for all its frivolity that people think, it is a business at the end of the day. And like, you'll meet people who run social media accounts for brands, and they'll be like, oh my God, what you do is actually really hard. I know now, because I, you know, run this social media account for this brand. And for some reason...
Interesting. Sorry, it's completely interrupted you, but you just reminded me of something. Carry on.
Oh no, I was just going to say that if I was a social media brand manager for a brand, people would be like, oh my God, is that an amazing job? But that is what I do for myself.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You're an amazing brand. So yeah. But yeah, no, I was just thinking that actually, because it was quite like, I don't know, like again, maybe because I don't take my job as seriously as I should, but having done lockdown I did it with my family. So I did it with my mum, my brother and my sister, my fiance now, and my best mate and her boyfriend. And I've always worked on my own, and I've worked from my living room whilst Alex goes to work, and I'm like, don't live with my family. It's the weirdest thing having had them watch me work, because still I'm twatting about that, and I can my brother and my sister's a student, but my brother and Alex both would be working, you know, super like, you know, regimented hours. So I'd feel like guilt if I was like, you know, sitting with my mum in the kitchen drinking a cup of tea when they were working. And I've been like, oh, I don't work as hard as him. I don't work as hard as him. And I actually had a chat with my brother the other day, and he was like, I could never do what you do. And I'm like, oh. So that was, I don't know why I had to wait for the affirmation, but it was like, it was really interesting, like seeing my own job through somebody else's gaze, I guess. So I don't know. I think we're quite hard on ourselves, and not influencers, but women, people, you know, we're hard on ourselves. And I think
I had
a lesson for a lot of people, like with working from home. Like, I think people realize how hard they work and how much they do. And you know what I mean?
Like, oh, totally. I was just about to say, I've had the exact same experience where I felt like, oh my God, because my boyfriend does such regulated work, whereas I might be like, part of my work might be literally listening to podcasts, reading books, thinking about content, which looks to other people like you're having fun, which you are, but it's like all part of your work. And I said the exact same thing with my boyfriend, where I started to get this really weird like inferiority complex because I wasn't on the phone to Hong Kong talking about whatever they talk about. And he said the exact same thing to me, is that I could never ever do what you do. I'd just give up straight away. Like, that takes, so it actually takes, not to now start bringing us up loads, but it does take quite a lot of self-control and self-determination and self-belief to like work at something which also is so fragile and honestly could be taken away from you at like the drop of a hat sort of thing.
That's my other existential crisis that I have on the regular. I'm like, I could wake up tomorrow and my whole career is over, and that's exhausting.
Yeah.
But I know it's interesting because, yeah, it just, and I guess that's been the same for a lot of people this year. But just, you know, like, it's taking yourself seriously. And, you know, even it within the working space and talking to accountants and lawyers and, you know, like the jobs are so, I think when we think of jobs, I'm like you said, like your boyfriend, like talking to Hong Kong, like I'm like, imagine. Money and like the city, and like that's what, like, you know, TV kind of showed as like a serious job, and actually there are so many amazing jobs out there and people doing amazing things, and I love seeing, like, you know, flexi working and working from home and part-time work and small business owners, and we're all just getting to see so much more of that now with social media and with the lockdown perhaps as well has exacerbated it. So it's quite cool to see just what the face of work changing as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. Sorry, I keep interrupting you. No, I completely agree. I think it's really amazing to see that like level of, also the fact that this one thing that gave me a tiny bit of like is that everyone was like, it's so hard to work from home, and I was like, oh my god, this is one thing I'm actually really good at.
Yeah. This is my time to shine. Let me show you my serious pajamas.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god, well thank you so much for joining me. I've literally loved chatting to you. I feel like we could be here quite literally all day,
because I was about to just like, I was like, we could go, like, we'd be down another path about careers, and then that's like it'll be tomorrow, so
it'd be forever.
It would be forever.
Oh well, so thank you so much for joining me, and if people want to find you online, tell us about where we should be going and if there's any other things that you want us to look out for or look at.
Oh my god, I wish I'd done something cool to plug. No, I just have my Instagram, which is EM, which is that's a source of confusion, but M_Clarkson, and then I have my other page if anybody's looking to try and get into sports next year as things finally open up. We're going to start going to triathlons and running events around the UK. we are going to make them just more inclusive and more fun. So we're going to be taking teams to a few events next year, so if anyone's wanted to do an event and been absolutely shitting themselves, come and shit yourself with us. And that's just at the Have a Goes on Instagram as well. And
yeah. Oh my god, so fun. I want to come along to that.
Oh my god, do we have so much fun. We've got some triathlon places sorted, we've got a 10k, we've got a duathlon, it's gonna be fun.
Amazing. Oh okay, well thank you so much again, and thank you everyone for listening, and I will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.